I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear, and it absolutely will not stop, ever, until you are dead.
Humans are such easy prey by Perturbator opens up this Parallax Views special presentation. Your host, J.G. Michael, recently appeared on the Trans Resistor Radio podcast with Aaron Franz to discuss the weird world of alt-right adjacent transhumanists. Now, you may be asking, what in the heck is transhumanism? Well, it's a 21st century techno-futurist ideology that predicts us hurling into a brave new world where man and machine are merged into one, what has often been called the singularity. In other words, a post-human world. Sound a bit like a sci-fi novel? I don't blame you for thinking that, because honestly, I think it's completely fantastical as well. That being said, the dreamer of the day can do a lot of damage by night. And Aaron Franz, the host of Trans Resistor Radio, definitely agrees with me on that. Aaron is the creator of the 2008 documentary The Age of Transitions, one of the first to tackle the transhumanist ideology from a critical perspective. Now, I don't think Aaron and I agree on every detail of our separate critiques of transhumanist thinking. There's a bit that I am, you know, a little bit skeptical of in The Age of Transitions. But we come to have very similar concerns nonetheless about this 21st century techno-futurist ideology, specifically its capacity for reviving the 20th century pseudo-scientific horrors of eugenics, popularized by the Third Reich. Now, I may not believe that we are even going to reach the type of sci-fi future that transhumanists envision, but that little bit about eugenics, nonetheless, still leaves me a little concerned. Or, if I'm honest, more than a little concerned. In this conversation, I guide Aaron through the weird web that connects Elijah Yudkowsky and his forum Less Wrong, home of the infamous Roko's Basilisk, more about that in the conversation, to the alt-right adjacent internet intellectual Mencius Moldbug, real name Curtis Yarvin, as well as the sordid story of Michael Anisimov, a self-described neo-reactionary, and last but not least, Mr. Dark Enlightenment himself, someone we've talked about on the show a few times before, the Shanghai Sith. Nick Land. All that and much more, including some jabs at Sam Harris and historian Yuval Noah Harari on this special presentation in which Parallax Views meets with Transresistor Radio and Aaron Franz.
Soon, we can all sleep soundly, knowing that Skynet is running the show. Thanks to Cyberdyne Systems and Skynet, our children will grow up in a world free to fear. Cyberdyne Systems, the future of information systems and robotics, the future of national defense. Cyberdyne Systems, we are the future.
Radio. You are listening to Trans Resistor Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Franz, coming at you live this 15th day of February 2019. Live every Friday night on Ocelli.com. Listen live. It's a lot of fun. Join us. And of course, we got the podcast still. Still lots of ways to pick up the podcast for Trans Resistor Radio. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM. It's all over the place. So hope you are subscribed. Tell your friends, share it on social media. Write up a review on iTunes. Write those reviews and I will read them on air. Looking forward to doing that. And thank you everybody who supports the show. If you really want to go big and support me a lot, you can support on Patreon. It's patreon.com/AaronFranz. Links to that are available at my website, theageoftransitions.com. So check out theageoftransitions.com for all things Trans Resistor Radio, all the stuff I'm doing, and yeah, theageoftransitions.com. So thank you, everybody. And there's a lot of stuff going on with this show. I got a lot of exciting things happening, but I don't want to get into it now. It'll be a story for another day because I want to get right to my guest tonight. I have a real good guest that I've spoken with before, and it's a new person that I'm just getting to know, haven't known for long, but I really like him a lot, and he does a great show. He's got a podcast called Parallax Views. Some listeners may know Parallax Views. I know Pierce has been on the show. Lots of great guests have come on the show. It's really interesting with a wide range of topics. So be sure to listen to Parallax Views if you're not. And of course, tonight my guest is the host of Parallax Views. I have JG Michael. How you doing, JG?
Good, good. What's up there, Aaron? Glad to be on the show.
Yeah. It's like I said, we've spoken before and not too many times, but hopefully there will be quite a few more times after this. And why don't you, just from the outset here, tell listeners about you, about yourself, maybe how you came to start doing Parallax Views, and just talk about Parallax Views as a show itself.
Well, you know, I don't just do Parallax Views. I also work for a left-wing publishing house called Zero Books. They're pretty well known for releasing the works of a cultural theorist by the name of Mark Fisher, who came up with this idea of hauntology and a lot of other interesting concepts related to left-wing thought. And I do a podcast for them with my friend C. Derek Varn called Alternatives. And after doing Alternatives for a few months, I started my own podcast, Parallax Views. So Alternatives and Parallax Views, they have a lot in common. We both cover a lot of cultural content. But Parallax Views is independently produced, and it's my attempt to just speak to people from various walks of life that are, you know, interesting to me or odd or just not heard that much. And I get a pretty broad range of guests on that, you know, I always get hate mail because, you know, I'll have some listeners that like one guest, but they'll hate another guest, you know. Yeah. So I kind of get a very wide base in there. And as you said, I've had Pierce Redmond on, private investigator Ed Opperman. So those are some of the guests that I think a lot of your listeners may be familiar with that they would, you know, probably enjoy listening to. We just did a roundtable with Ed and Pierce, actually, on Roger Stone, the political dirty trickster. So, you know, that'll be fun, and I think your listeners would enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. I have that on my list of podcasts on my device there. I'm looking forward to listening to that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So that, you know, you download certain shows, and it's like, oh, man, this is going to be fun when I get to this. So something for me to look forward to, and also suggest it to listeners. But yeah, you're saying the eclectic range of guests. I know that can be problematic to some people. Like, hey, yeah, like, I thought you were doing this one thing. You confused me. But personally, I that's one of the things I really like. Like, I love just going all over the place and just covering. You can tell that the show is all the guests are people that you find interesting, things that you really care about, and you don't mind just going anywhere. So
right.
That's something I really enjoy.
Yeah.
But
I was going to say I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say the first guest I ever had on the show actually may be germane to the topic you wanted to discuss tonight. Elizabeth Sandifer. She's the author of a book called Neo Reaction: A Basilisk. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more though. Why don't you introduce my listeners to the sort of topic you wanted to cover?
Yes, well, I've invited you on tonight because you know a bit about quite a few topics, and then I found out that one of those topics is transhumanists, not even just transhumanism, but the transhumanists themselves and the sorts of ideologies they're into, the sort of, because there's different factions within transhumanism, and there's certainly a far right faction within transhumanism. There's also a very left-wing faction as well. But tonight we're specifically really going to focus on the right wing here. So why don't you go ahead and let us know what is the correlation between sort of right-wing politics, maybe libertarianism, and transhumanism?
Well, you know, if you really want to take it back, I think a lot of transhumanist thought comes out of this little web forum that was around in the 2000s. It's still operating, but it's called Less Wrong, which was founded by Elijah Yudkowsky, who now runs a group called MARI, the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. And MARI is trying to find ways to create friendly AI, because, you know, people like Yudkowsky are, you know, afraid of malicious artificial intelligence, like a Skynet scenario, essentially. And it's interesting because the Less Wrong forums had this whole blow up over this idea of Rocco's Basilisk, which is sort of this Pascal's wager thought experiment about, you know, if an AI can exist in the future, and we think about it sufficiently enough, it can, you know, reach back in time and torture us in the future or something like that. It's a very, I think it's a fantastical sort of goofy thought experiment. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But it caused people like Yudkowsky to really flip out. And it's interesting because people like Yudkowsky also sort of believe in this transhumanist stuff, you know. Yudkowsky is famous for believing in cryogenics, you know, freezing people's bodies to make them live forever, all this stuff. So there's a lot of correlation there. But the Less Wrong people tended to be very libertarian. And they would agree with things like, you know, anti-political correctness. One of the things on the Less Wrong forum that was very popular was this idea of not censoring yourself at all. You know, whatever comes to mind, you have to put it out there in order to get to the rational truth of things. You know, they really worship logic as a religion and sort of think of themselves as Spock from Star Trek in a lot of ways. Although Spock actually had emotions, too. So they're wrong on that count, too.
Nice. Now, MIRI is the successor to Singularity University. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, they were they were associated with Kurzweil, was one of the guys, and they were also, for a minute there, Google had a Singularity University, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. What's the status of Miri these days? Is it just kind of like the pet project of Yudkowsky and he does it on his own? Is it connected with Google or any Silicon Valley companies or no?
Well, I believe Miri still gets funding from, you know, there's a lot of word that Peter Thiel helps fund it, and there's rumors of funding by Elon Musk. So, yeah, I think Miri is still going pretty strong. I mean, Yudkowsky does the rounds on a lot of the bigger podcasts. You know, Sam Harris is Waking Up, which is now called Making Sense, which yes. Sam Harris doesn't really do that often. He doesn't make sense. So I don't know why it's called that.
Yeah. Now, I've been telling you before doing the show that Yudkowsky is one of these characters I've actually met in person. Mm-hmm.
And well, for what it's worth, I want to say something here, too.
Yeah.
I don't, like, have some, like, I don't dislike Yudkowsky. I think he's sort of a lovable eccentric, but I think a lot of the things that have come out of Yudkowsky's circles is very, very bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's almost an archetypical sort of transhumanist in my mind, in that he's... You know, he's a bit of a nerd. That's not a bad thing. He just is. And he's prone to certain ways of thinking. And he's the sort that latches on to the transhumanist religion. And, of course, the people who latch on to the transhumanist religion vehemently have to protest the idea that it is a religion, because they're very much anti-religion in any and all of its forms.
Which is ironic.
Yeah, exactly.
The big thing with Yudkowsky and a lot of his followers is like Bayesian mathematical theory, but the way they look at it is extremely like religious, and it's because like they want to apply math to every aspect of human life, whether it be dating and relationships and love or anything else. There's no room for ambiguity. They want to think in very black and white terms. They want black and white answers, and I think it really bothers. Characters like Yudkowsky, that life doesn't really work that way. You even see that in, he wrote a fan fiction that became very famous. It's called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, where he recasts Harry Potter as like a scientist type character, and he's like the rational man. But at one point in that story, Harry Potter starts crying because, you know, why can't other people be rational like Harry Potter is? And you can tell that Yudkowsky is talking about himself. I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, it's sort of sad. Like, you know, I think people like Yudkowsky probably, I mean, I think he leans into his nerdishness at this point. I mean, he even wrote like an anime love story about cat girls at one point. I think he knows what he's doing to some extent. But I think a lot of people that like Yudkowsky, you know, I think a lot of them are people that may have like a social awkwardness or social anxiety issues. It's unfortunate in a way.
Yeah, I know. And then there's nothing wrong with that. And as I said, I met him. I didn't dislike him when I met him. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, he's just one of these characters that embodies like the quintessential transhumanist. And there's certain faults in that sort of personality type. And I think the biggest one being that they're unable to just catch their own faults themselves and just like call themselves out, like, well, you know what, maybe I should just relax a bit. I mean, they're pedal to the metal with these hardcore beliefs that they have, the logic and the reason, and as you said, like trying to explain everything in the world according to mathematics, as if that's like the only way you can do things.
Well, it's weird because they're so, it's almost like they're unaware of just how emotional they come off at times. Like I said, Yudkowsky is a person that like gets angry that other people aren't like him, you know, and that not everything can be answered mathematically. Like it's like they think that they're these completely logical, rational beings, but no one is completely logical or rational. You know, rational choice theory is kind of really not accepted by a lot of people anymore for that reason. Like, humans are emotional, social animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, math and algorithms and all these things, they're their designs and their formulas, and they work within the context that they work, but you have to understand their limitations too. Yeah, they're real good at doing certain things, but it's not like the way to understand everything. I feel like there's we could go on and on talking about this, but why don't we talk a bit about how Les Wrong and Yudkowsky and anybody affiliated with him do sort of go from the transhumanist ideology over into maybe more right wing or other extreme views? What's the connection there?
Well, I think the example that Elizabeth Sandifer, who I mentioned was the author of Neo-Reaction: A Basilisk, the example she uses is that out of Les Wrong, we get this character by the name of Mencius Moldbug. Now, Mencius Moldbug isn't his real name. His real name is Curtis Yarvin, and he runs a startup called Urbit. But he's more known, as I said, by his pseudonym, Mencius Moldbug, and his blog, Unqualified Reservations. So Moldbug/Yarvin comes out of this whole Les Wrong circle, and he starts writing this blog, Unqualified Reservations. And out of Unqualified Reservations, that's where we get all these right-wing terms like the red pill. You know, he sort of believes that...
Wow. Wait a minute. I'm sorry, but the actual term red pill that everybody uses, did it originate there?
Well, I mean, it's a reference to the Matrix, but Curtis Yarvin was the one that first appropriated it for the right wing.
Mencius Moldbug
is the intellectual predecessor to the alt-right and what's called the Dark Enlightenment or neo-reaction.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry. That's just a huge detail right there mm-hmm. that I was not aware of myself. That's big. Okay, continue.
Well, so Moldbug, he writes in this like aristocratic style. He's basically like a fanboy of Thomas Carlyle. You know, he tries to write like he's an aristocrat from the 1800s. And he's sort of a libertarian that decides that, well, you know, we can't have a libertarian society because the masses are stupid and democracy is horrible. And he essentially ends up wanting a world in which CEOs run every country. So at one point he says, instead of having the president of the United States, we should just make CEO of America Steve Jobs. You know, he basically wants these neo-feudal monarchies because he thinks democracy doesn't work. It's all very, like, crazy, crazy stuff. But it's interesting because, you know, there were emails between him and Milo Yiannopoulos where he talks about how he's friends with Peter Thiel, and Peter Thiel is, you know, very, very knowledgeable about, you know, what's really going on in the world, and he's on our side and all this stuff. So, you know, it could be that Moldbug is, you know, trying to make himself sound more important than he is, but it sounds like there's some important people like Thiel that agree with his sort of anti-democracy, pro-monarchist, pro-feudalist stances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If we know anything about Peter Thiel, he would be right there for that. His idea of a utopia, like starting a new nation on an island, the transhumanist civilization where they make their own rules. And you know about that idea, right?
Oh, yeah, the floating islands. Yeah. And Moldbug's into all that stuff. I mean, Moldbug is really some of the things he says on the blog are, you know, everyone uses this term now mockingly, but like some of the things he says on his blog really are triggering in a lot of ways. Like he argues that, you know, the slaves during the era of slavery in the U.S. were just genetically made to be slaves. But then he talks about, well, I don't agree with slavery, though. I'm just saying that, you know, black people were made to be like sort of slaves. That's what they were bred for. You know, he's a really odious sort of person.
Okay, so he'll say one thing and then he'll say another. Okay, all right. I mean, this is fascinating. As I said, I had no idea that the actual term red pill, as it's been popularly used within the alt-right, came from Moldbug, and that it's tied in with these transhumanist and other concepts. I mean, that's absolutely fascinating.
Well, I don't know if Moldbug is necessarily a transhumanist, but he's in those circles.
Sure.
So he's sort of tied to a lot of it, especially the transhumanists that are sort of like pro monarchy, which that basically comes up in the form of people like Michael Anisimov, who is fallen off the face of the map, and the other big one now is a former Warwick University professor by the name of Nick Land, who coined the term Dark Enlightenment, and they're both very wacky figures.
Yeah. Okay. But, who is this Nick Land, and what is the Dark Enlightenment? Let's get into that right now.
Well, real quick, I want to say about the red pill thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny because Moldbug talks about, you know, you take the red pill once, but then you take it over and over and over again because it's just so much fun to take the red pill and to see the truth of the world. And I've always made the comparison. I'm like, well, if you could really see the truth by taking this metaphorical red pill, you would only need to take it once, right? So to me, it's not really a red pill. It's just, you know, it's like an addictive drug for these people. It's like crack. You know, they don't really care about the truth. They just like being edgy and hurting other people.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I just like things like the irony of these groups that using a term by from a movie that was made by a transgender group of siblings, you know?
The Wachowskis, yeah.
Yeah, the Wachowskis. You know what I mean? Like, well, how do they feel about, do they care about that? Is that something that they really get up in arms about? Is,
well,
like,
it's funny, too, because in The Matrix, they reference a book called Simulation and Simulacra by Jean Baudrillard, who is one of the French continental philosophers often associated with postmodernism, which is what all these alt-right people and all these Jordan Peterson people, they hate postmodernism. It's Marxism, blah, blah, blah. And yet, you know, I mean, one of the greatest French continental postmodern philosophers is basically a huge aspect in the Matrix movies.
Yeah. Never ceases to make me laugh is these contradictions everywhere, these the ideologies of these folks. But yeah, a corporate technocracy of sorts, with CEOs running the show instead of democracy, and it sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds pretty good. But I'd like to ask you quickly about Anisimov, because again, he's another guy I met back in 2009, and he was, you know, he was a nice enough guy. He was friendly and, you know, similar. I think I want to say he's probably the same age as me. So, you know, we would talk. We were not ideologically, we were ideologically at odds, but, you know, it was nice to just meet and talk to one another at least. What was his deal, and why has he gone? Well, I haven't even followed this. I'm just curious myself.
Well, we can do Anisimov, and then we'll move on to Nick Land, because he's like the juggernaut in all of this. Anisimov, yeah. Though, I think he's one of those people that I mentioned earlier, sort of had libertarian views, and then he came to this conclusion. And I mean, you come to this conclusion if you read the anarcho-capitalist type people very closely. Like, if you read Murray Rothbard closely enough, you start realizing that what Rothbard is actually calling for is like very extremely authoritarian. One of the big thinkers that influence a lot of these people is a so-called libertarian thinker by the name of Hans Hermann Hoppe. And Hoppe wrote a book called Democracy, the God That Failed. And Hoppe argues basically that monarchy was better than democracy. And, you know, it's weird because it's like a libertarianism that eventually, if you take it far enough, turns into sort of this monarchistic authoritarian feudalism. And I think Anisimov is one of these people that said, well, libertarianism can't work because the masses are stupid and dumb and, you know, screw democracy for that reason. Let's just have the philosopher kings, as Plato would say, run the show. But Anisimov has fallen off the face of the earth. He wrote a book, I believe it was just called Neo-Reaction, which was like a field guide to so-called neo-reactionary thought, which is sort of this like, it's techno-reactionary, you know, like let's have the CEOs run everything. Anisimov, though, he sort of fell off the face of the earth after having a meltdown in 2015. And this sort of shows you how wacky these people are. Anisimov started contacting a libertarian YouTube comedian by the name of Jolie Borowski. Now, I don't agree with anything Borowski really thinks. I'm very much to the left. I'm very progressive. But he was just sort of like hitting on her online. He's like, come over to my house. I'm drunk. Play Sonic the Hedgehog 3 with me. And she sort of just mocked him and made fun of him. And he had like a temper tantrum. He was like, there were people commenting on Borowski's looks saying, oh, well, she's not a 10, but she's kind of cute. And he was just like harassing her. You know, it was straight up, you know, to me, it was like sexual harassment. And after that happened, he sort of fell off the face of the earth. I mean, these people are kind of like, I think it's indicative of how lonely a lot of these people really are.
Yeah, well, so much of this is bred out of, you know, just online communities. It's like the it's fits perfectly from going from internet forums and all this to saying, hey, look, you know, we live on the internet. We've been doing this. This is our thing. Mm-hmm. Let's just make technology where we live forever, you know, and, you know, live in virtual worlds, et cetera, the transhuman dream. So it makes sense. And it also makes sense that these problems related to all the alienation due to technology and all the, you know, all these crazy issues to do with technology end up being the things that sort of are the undoing of a lot of these transhumanist types, because it's just, I mean, that's just the nature of this beast. But yeah,
are you familiar with Stephen Fuller? This may actually be a good segue into Nick Land. Do you know Stephen Fuller?
Name's not familiar.
Who Warwick University. He's big into the whole post-human, transhumanism stuff. Warwick University is known for having a lot of unconventional sort of professors. Actually, Mark Fisher also came out of Warwick University. But Stephen Fuller is one of these people who's a big supporter of like Ray Kurzweil. And he thinks that, you know, we're moving away from right and left wing politics. The new politics is going to be upwingers, which is the transhuman people, the people that will augment themselves through technology, and downwingers, the people that are not going to do that. And it's interesting because Fuller, in one of his books, actually talks about the need to rehabilitate the ideas of eugenics. And he's like, well, Hitler had some bad ideas, but, you know, eugenics is something we need to really look at again. You know, it's crazy. And Fuller is not one of these figures that on the surface seems to be dark. He's like sort of the nice happy face of these things. But yeah, I mean, even he has said things like this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing where that stuff will just pop right out. And you see the truth for what it is. It's like, you know, that nice guy that was saying just this stuff about how technology is advancing and transhumanism is a fun idea. I mean, well, he also thinks eugenics is a good idea, and that's the future. And, you know, so often I'm reminded of how eugenics is an integral part of this. I mean, you say these things, and of course the people who are into transhumanism immediately just come at you like, no, that's not true, that eugenics has nothing to do with this, or it's totally different, totally different. And then, you know, down the line, one of them will be like, well, you know what, eugenics, it's great. Like, yeah, and then I'll be like, remember what I said before? You know, like, so I don't know, but who is this Nick Land? Is he another eugenicist? Like, what's his deal?
So Nick Land is a former professor of Warwick University. Again, he actually worked closely with Mark Fisher, who, as I said, was a big influence on Zero Books. Mark, though, ended up becoming very, very far away from the way Nick Land thinks about things. And Nick Land basically taught postmodern philosophy. He was real into the works of French thinkers like Georges Bataille and Jacques Deleuze. Very much a postmodernist thinker. And what he did was he wanted to experiment with drugs and, you know, sort of the rave culture and the music around that. Electronic jungle music, and, you know, he wanted to break down language. It all sounds very, very sci-fi. This is back in the 80s and 90s. He's part of the POMO underground, and the way he wanted to do this was just taking massive amounts of amphetamines, or so the legend goes. So during his time at Warwick University, he's taking amphetamines constantly, trying to figure out how to, as he would say, break into the human security system, which is basically a metaphor for language. And it's a whole insane story of him basically alienating everyone at Warwick University and eventually having a mental breakdown, which he talks about in his book, Fanged Noumena. And there's an article called A Dirty Joke. It's an essay in that book called A Dirty Joke, where he's having the amphetamine psychosis break. And it's actually a very chilling essay, because he starts referring to himself as the Ruins. And you can tell he's just like breaking down completely. At one point, he's in a car with his sister, and he is saying, "I like this music." And his sister says to him, "There's no music playing." And he says to himself in his head, I just realized at that point that I have an entire pop music industry playing inside my head. Best not to tell family this, though. They'll think I'm going crazy. He's a very weird character that has this mental breakdown from amphetamine usage. And eventually this leads him to leave Warwick University. He resurfaces years later in China. He's a big promoter of China. I often call him the Shanghai Sith Lord. And he writes this essay called The Dark Enlightenment, where he promotes the ideas of Mencius Moldbug. He says that the academy is just used to mind control people through what he calls the cathedral, which is like the mind control device of academia, and it's all a left-wing sort of plot, right? You know, postmodernism, all that stuff is just used to control the masses. And it gets really dark from there, because he starts talking about white nationalism and all this other stuff. But near the end of the Dark Enlightenment essay, he says, well, white nationalism doesn't matter anymore because we are at the edge of a bionic horizon. And then he says, think face tentacles. And he's like, well, what we have to think about now is how there's going to be post-humans and then everyone else, the transhuman future. And it's honestly he kind of supports the idea of a transhuman future, because that's what capitalism wants. He views capitalism as a literal entity. He talks about capitalism as being sentient and, pushing us towards this post-human future where the humans will be wiped out and we'll have these, Cthulhu-like Lovecraftian post-humans.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a Lovecraft a reference there with the face tentacles, obviously. Mm-hmm. So very dark. Obviously. So he's a guy who comes from the academic establishment and rebels, basically, is his story, right? And he rebels and starts saying that, like, look, I was used by this thing, and now I'm speaking out against it. And that is very Sith Lord-like, because, he's brought into this elite fold of, academia, like the Jedi's, and then he breaks away due to his own ideas about things, and lo and behold, very dark and disturbing.
It would sound funny if it wasn't like so. There's a lot of young people that like sort of. I know there's a lot of young people that follow Nick Land on Twitter, and I'm like, I don't know, the type of people that read Nick Land should probably go outside more. They're probably doing more harm to themselves than good.
Yeah,
but he's a very smart guy. He knows how to argue with language in such a way as he's slippery. He will always point out, well, I didn't say that. I said this. He's sort of intentionally cryptic and obfuscatory.
Sure. Yeah. Well, how esoteric. The concept of language I find fascinating within transhumanist thought, because it's an integral part of what we are as humans now and what we've been able to build up as a civilization, as much to do with our language.
Aaron, I wanted to tell you real quick, he's huge into Kabbalah as well. So that may interest you.
Oh, okay. Well, of course, who isn't? But talking about language, Kabbalah, that in like a mystic esoteric sense has very much to do with the genesis of language. You know, you look at the Hebrew alphabet and all that, that's very, plays very important part in all this. And if we're talking about the religious concept of all this, language fits in. And there, many times you see the reference to this future scenario that will be brought about by transhumanism technology and all that. And it, the way that language factors in, it seems that the idea is to, and there's like a double-edged thing with this, but to basically enact a new form of telepathy as this ideal language. You could look at it one way in that you're looking back to the past in, and say that this is the original language that humans once had in like an Edenic state, maybe even. This was like the language before the fall. And we've returned to this state through actually the workings of taking the forbidden fruit. And because of the fall, actually, we come to this state. So it gets very enigmatic and esoteric and occult when you start dealing with this idea. But have you come across any of this, these concepts with language?
You know, I don't know if I'm as familiar with it. My basic view on sort of these edgy transhumanist types, the Nick Lands and the Michael Anisimovs, is sort of it's very sociology oriented. I think a lot of these guys, like I said, Nick Land is a guy who left academia. I think he's mad because he couldn't be an influencer. You know, he wanted to be the next Jean-Paul Sartre, and it didn't happen.
Yes.
People like,
yes,
Michael Anisimov, they want to be like considered these grand intellectuals, you know, libertarian, yeah, intellectuals, and they're not. You know, they've sort of been pushed to the side of things. They're not really well respected within, you know, even their own sort of circles. They're sort of goofy characters that have cult followings on Twitter.
Yeah. They're not content with being marginalized. They have to they're not able to understand their place, really. Because
Moldbug is a college dropout.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a programmer. These are people that want it to be respected, and for whatever reason, things didn't work out the way they wanted to. And, yeah, you know, a lot of us think, most of us don't get where we want in life. There's very few people that are truly successful in the way that they envision when they're a kid. The difference is that these people feel that, well, life wasn't what I thought it would be. So now everyone has to pay the price because I didn't get what I wanted. It's a temper tantrum, yes, is what it is.
Yes, there's definitely an arrested development aspect to this. There's definitely a childish aspect to this, and the immaturity to it. And it's funny, there's a interesting synchronicity in that. Just the other day, yesterday, I was thinking about so many people online, and even like Sam Harris and all these philosopher type people who want to be philosophers. I was thinking, I'm like, you know what, everybody wants to be the next Friedrich Nietzsche, you know, and a lot of people like want to pick up where he left off, and like, or they wish that that's what they were doing, but they're not really. That's just like a thought I had the other day. And I don't know. It's funny that you bring this up here, that's kind of, I mean, talk about
Can
a
I
walk
comment on the Sam Harris thing real quick.
Please do. Yes.
Okay. So Sam Harris, you know, everyone thinks he's this really smart dude. But even people in the new atheist community, there's always been whispers of just how he received his degree, because you know who his mother is, right? His mother is the inventor of the Golden Girls. That dude was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And there's a lot of people that worked with Sam Harris, who I won't mention by name because, you know, private stuff, but they'll tell you if you come in contact with them. They worked with him when he was a graduate student at Yale. He didn't do any of the work. They did all the work. He was sort of just given a pass to do things. You know, like, because of the family he was brought up into. There's always been whispers of that amongst people who have worked with him, you know, and he gets a lot of facts wrong about things like Buddhism and all these other things. So he's another character that, you know, I just don't know what to think of Sam Harris, because once you start talking to people privately about him, there's not a lot of good comments to be made.
Yeah, I've only recently been made aware of him. A friend actually recommended his podcast. I listened to a couple episodes, and listening to it, it seems like he wants to be taken as a left-wing sort of guy, but then I read that he's right-wing. I'm like, I don't know what this guy's doing. I don't know much about him. I mean, what officially does he want to be? Does he ally himself with left or right? Does he not care? What's his deal?
He's, well, I would say he's like a, I mean, his big turn rightward was because he really does not like Islam. So he sort of just went into this crazy reactionary direction. I mean, he'll still say, oh, I'm a liberal and I hate Trump. But, you know, he's a very odd character. He just did a show actually on universal basic income, which actually ties into a lot of this because.
Oh, God, yes.
There's these two characters, Tyler Cowen, who's a sort of this libertarian economist. I believe he teaches economics at George Mason University. And he's real popular with a lot of these dark enlightenment and neo-reactionary guys. And Yuval Noah Harari, an Israeli historian who wrote a book called Homo Deus. Before that, he wrote a very good book called Sapiens. I can't say the same for Homo Deus, which is about the post-human future in which there will be God people, and then there will be the useless class, as he calls them. And Tyler Cowen also, incidentally, uses the term useless class, which he says is going to be caused by automation. And some of these people, they support universal basic income because they believe that automation is going to wipe out so many of these jobs. That they're just going to have a universal basic income. The government gives out money each year to this useless class of people. And, you know, I think people like Harari, who are pretty much on the transhumanist side of things, I find it very frightening that they're bestsellers who are talking about the useless class. And Harari should know better because, as I said, he's an Israeli historian. He should know what the term useless class means and who uses that term.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely scary stuff. I mean,
well, it's scary because Harari and Cowen are actually respected. Those are actually people that are respected in the New York Times, and they're best-selling authors. And they're pushing this crap even more so than people like Nick Land. Nick Land is at least honest about how horrific his vision of what the world should be is. People like Harari throw around terms like useless class, which brings to my mind images of Nazis. Yes. They just do it without any abandon at all. And yeah, they say, well, it won't end the same way. It won't end the same way. This time, we're not going to genocide this useless class of people. We'll give them UBI instead. And I don't think that's how it's going to end. I think if you institute a UBI for these people that are going to be out of work because of automation, eventually someone's going to come along and say, well, why even give these people money? They're just useless eaters.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. They'll be addicted to virtual reality. They'll be doing nothing but playing the new fashion video games all day. And they'll be like, look, they don't do anything. They're useless. They're even hurting themselves. There's only one thing we can do, you know? Like, I can't help but see that myself over and over again. And why don't you just flesh out a little more the concept of dark enlightenment? Because I know throughout transhumanist circles, enlightenment values, so to speak, are promoted. And it, within the left wing, very much so, too. So there's different concepts of, you know, enlightenment values. But what is dark enlightenment? What's going on there?
Okay, so people like Nick Land and Mencius Moldbug, they're influenced by libertarianism. They actually kind of like classical liberalism. But to them, they see the Enlightenment and liberal values as destroying themselves. So they see all the great liberal values of the Enlightenment being the exact thing that brings those values down, which it's a really weird concept. Nick Land compares the Enlightenment to like Norman Bates, you know, the very thing that sort of the Enlightenment creates is the very thing that kills the Enlightenment ideals. So they believe that they need to have a dark Enlightenment. That will save these liberal values. The only thing that will save these liberal values, though, are sort of this authoritarian neo-feudal hellscape that they envision in the future. why these people think they're going to be the aristocrats of that neo-feudal future, I don't understand. They think they're the smarty pants, though.
Yeah, it always works that way. The people that are promoting this will be the first ones to go when it gets enacted. It's just absolute insanity. The thing with me that I keep coming back to, you know, with all this is like so much of this is like over intellectualized, if you ask me. Like, and not in the sense that
well, a lot of what they're pushing is also just discredited pseudoscience. I mean, well, people often throw around the word scientism incorrectly, but scientism is actually a very real thing. You know, people that think science has some type of telos, like it's going towards an endpoint, they don't understand what science is. They've never taken philosophy of science courses. Science isn't moving towards anything. Evolution doesn't move towards this teleological purpose. That would be like claiming that science, it's just replacing the term God with science. You know, and it's not scientific.
No. Well, it's eschatological. And
exactly,
And that's what it is. It's just their form of eschatology. It's their preferred form of it, which they're throwing the label of science and logic and reason, but they're not able to see these gaps in their thought. And when I say over-intellectualized, I guess more appropriately, it's like the idea that their concepts are purely rational and logical and intellectual in nature when they're failing to see the faults in their method of logic, because you have to look at this stuff philosophically and you have to see where you go way far away from the realm of science, which is only a method. It's only a method for, you know, experimenting, testing and getting results and then doing it over again. That's all it is. Moving from that into the realm of religion, and like not just any religion, not just like you know, your run-of-the-mill Lutheran church down the street. This is really extremist forms of religion with all the worst aspects of extreme cult religions that come along with that. You know, like all the the calling for mass murder, and then again, as you said, they're these people doing this, it somehow flies under the radar. They can use these crazy terms like useless class, and nobody seems to bat an eyebrow. Like, oh, that's an intellectual guy, and he knows what he's talking about, and there's nothing wrong with saying that. What's the worst that could happen?
It's also very bizarre how they think of things. Like I mentioned Tyler Cowen, who he's popular with the neo-reaction types, but he's very, very mainstream. And he'll always say that, you know, the left and the liberals and the so-called social justice warriors, they're leading a Robespierrean terror. That's a big thing with a lot of these people, is referencing the French Revolution. A lot of them in these circles will say, I can't wait for Thermidor, which Thermidor was the rebellion against the French Revolution. And it's just bizarre to me that they think that way, because, you know, the French Revolution happened because people were literally eating grass. They were eating grass.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't blame people for revolting. You know, I'm not saying the reign of terror during the French Revolution was like some nice thing, but they were eating grass. What, like, it boggles my mind that these people don't even consider that what they're advocating for will actually end in their own downfall. Because at the end of the day, as much as people don't use this term anymore, human beings are social animals. We like to help each other. There's ideas out there like mutual aid, which is an evolutionary idea stating that we got a lot of where we got as a civilization is because of our ability to cooperate rather than to dominate and harm each other. And not everything is about hyper competition, but these people think that they think growing wealth inequality is a good thing. And we know how that ends. It ends with people saying, enough is enough. I deserve to be able to live a life and not have to, you know, starve or worry about where I'm going to sleep tonight. You know, they're creating the conditions for like a violent upheaval. That's the most ironic thing about all of this. They just think people are stupid, and people aren't.
Yeah. I agree. People are a lot smarter than a lot of, certainly like this way of thinking. Give some credit. You know, you think that the average person is stupid, I would say I just like a instinctual, intuitive level. Even people understand what's going on, and they certainly can understand when they're being talked down to. And that's why these guys have a limited audience, and why they get mad about having a limited audience, I don't understand, because it's the nature of what they're doing, but, you know, so be it.
Well, like I said, people like Harari and Tyler Cowen, or maybe even a Ray Kurzweil, these people have a much, much broader audience. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the people that are really dangerous.
Yes, I agree, because they're just, I mean, they're just a fancier version of the same thing going on here. And what even is Kurzweil's title at Google now? Is it just guru? Is he called, is that his job title? I can't remember.
It might as well be. Maybe he's the, he's like the ideas guy that goes around giving TED Talks.
Nice work if he can get it. Kurzweil, yeah, Kurzweil is one of these guys that amazes me. Like, I cannot believe he is who he is, because the only other person I can think of that's less charismatic in these circles is Larry Page. You know what I mean?
Familiar with Larry Page. Who is that?
He's Google. It's Larry Page and Sergey Brin.
I know Sergey Brin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he is Google. Like well, it's a long story of how it got started, and they were like grad students, and he's the opposite of charismatic. And then you've got Kurzweil, very much the same thing. Like, when he's on stage, it's just an utter bore. And it always blows my mind, like, that this was the guy picked, or that he's the guy who happens to be the spokesman for all this stuff. I'm like, how did this happen? You'd think they'd be able to find someone better in this, but I don't know. Well,
you know, it reminds me of who's the guy that got in trouble? The Google guy that was like, women can't code and all that stuff. James.
I don't know who got in trouble with that. Sounds like more of the same, though.
James Damore. You know, okay. It's interesting, because these people think they know everything about human behavior. They think they know everything about biology. And really, a lot of these people are just programmer dudes. They're programmer bros that they want to view everything as having a programmable answer. And I'm sorry, but human beings aren't computers. And that's the mistake they're making. And that's why I think all this talk of singularity and transhumanism, and you may disagree with this, I think they're all going to, it's all going to go up in flames for these people. I think the human spirit is a very strong thing.
Well, I hope you're correct in that. And I tend to believe that you are. And yeah, I guess time will tell. We'll see what happens. And, hopefully it ends up that way, and that transhumanism goes away, at least as an ideology and something that's frowned upon in history books. That'd be nice to see.
Well, but hopefully we don't end up with face tentacles, as Nick Land would say.
Yeah, I'd rather that not happen either. You know,
real quick, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to say, so Nick Land has a Twitter called Outsideness. You know, coldness be thy god is his big thing. He's so edgy. But he posted on Valentine's Day, roses are red, violets are blue, and that's why they hate each other, making secession inevitable. So I said to him, is this your way of saying you and your wife are getting a divorce? I don't think he liked that. It's interesting, too, because he has kids and his wife is a human rights campaigner. So I'm, you know, he's a very odd character. People should look him up and read that book I mentioned, Neo-Reaction of Basilisk. Elizabeth Sandifer, she does the greatest takedown of these people that I have ever come across.
Nice. All right. Well, that's nice to see that being done out there. We're getting toward the tail end of this hour. I'm hoping you'll stick around for the next hour, where this becomes the broadcast. That's going to be a lot of fun. And before we do, why don't you just remind listeners of all of your material and where they can find it online?
Well, first, I'd like to plug Zero Books. Zero Books does a lot of good work. As I said, we're most known for releasing the books of Mark Fisher, who, unlike people like Nick Land, who Mark Fisher worked with but, you know, broke from, Mark Fisher was a good guy that had a lot of good ideas. He actually cared about people. He has a book, Capitalist Realism, which we still carry, and Ghosts of My Life is his other book that we carry. They... they're really great books, especially if you have a more progressive sort of left-wing tilt on things. And even if you don't, I think our books are worth reading. I do a podcast there called Alternatives, where we explore the cultural zeitgeist with me and my co-host, C. Derek Barn. And if you enjoy hearing me spout off about my opinions on all these matters, I also have my independently produced podcast, Parallax Views. I've interviewed, like you said at the beginning, a very wide range of people. So it gets wacky, but it's always intelligent.
Yeah, that's my favorite combo out there, wacky and intelligent. It's possible to do that. I think along the same lines of what we're talking about before and sort of the downfall of a lot of these people we've spoken of, I think it's the inability to understand their own wackiness. And like they're taking themselves too seriously. And then when they realize like there's nowhere else to go, they don't have like, it's not like, oh, you know, like I goofed up, or like, you know, maybe you do some sort of self-deprecating sort of thing. Like, oh, like, you know, Pee Wee Herman coming out, like you heard any good jokes lately, that sort of thing. They're like the last people that would be able to do that.
Right. Well, so, what happens is you end up, you write essays on face tentacles, Harry Potter fan fictions, and you harass girls online asking them to be your e-girlfriend and play Sonic the Hedgehog with you.
Yeah, exactly. That's the alternative to just like sucking up, going like, you know what, I'm into like weird stuff, and you know, maybe I should just bite the bullet and call things as they are and understand that I'm an oddball and that's the way things are going to be. But I guess, you know, to each their own. We'll iron out all these bizarre ideas as the future rolls on, and who knows what the sands of time will bring. But I'm excited to be living right now, because I'm just endlessly entertained, if nothing else.
Amen.
But as
that.
I said, yeah, we've got Uncle the Broadcast coming up next. So if you're listening live, please do so. This is Trans Resistor Radio. You can find this show at theageoftransitions.com. And as I said, if you're not subscribed, you're a new listener, subscribe to the show. It's everywhere. Give a nice review on iTunes, share it on social media. I'm on Twitter, too, if you want to find me, Franz Simulation. Look up Aaron Franz. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you to J.G. Michael for being my guest tonight. As always, I will leave you all by saying, Seeker, seek on.
Radio.
Well, that does it for this Parallax Views special presentation, made in collaboration with Aaron Franz and Trans Resistor Radio. If you enjoyed listening to that episode, you can always hear Trans Resistor Radio live every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com. OCHELLI.com. Ocelli.com. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say, don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.